When one surrenders unto the lotus feet of the Lord, he does so with everything in his possession, his house, his body, his mind, and whatever else he possesses. If there is any obstruction to the surrendering process, one should immediately give it up without attachment. If one can surrender with all his family members, there is no need to take sannyas. However, if the surrendering process is hampered by so-called family members, one should immediately give them up to complete the surrendering process. And we'll finish the section. There's no more purports, but we'll go on to text 62 up to that. Evani nathara hibe tomara charane rabe he adnata kariba sevane. This son, Vaninath, will remain at your lotus feet to always immediately attend to your orders and serve you.
Atmiya jnane more sankocha nakaribe ye yabe ichatabe se agnya vive.
My dear Lord, please consider me your relative. Do not hesitate to order whatever you desire at any time you desire it.
Prabhu kahe ekam chora tumi nahi para janme janme tumi amara sambase kinkara.
Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted Bhavananda Rai's offer, saying, I accept without hesitation, because you are not an outsider. Birth after birth, you have been my servant along with your family members.
Dina pancha sata bitare ashipe ramananda. Tanre sange ponahabe amara ananda.
Sri Ramananda Rai is coming within 5 or 7 days. As soon as he arrives, my desires will be fulfilled. I take great pleasure in his company.
Eta bali prabhu tanri kaila alingana. Tanri putra sabhe siri dharira charana.
Saying this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced Bhavananda Rai. The Lord then touched the heads of his sons with his lotus feet.
Tabe mahaprabhu tanre ghare pataira vane nata patanaya te nikate rakida.
Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then sent Bhavananda Rai back to his home, and he kept only Vaninath Patanayaka in his personal service.
Bhattacharya sabha loka vedhaya karaira tabe prabhu kara krishna dase bolalira.
Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya then asked all the people to leave. Afterwards, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu called for Kala Krishna Das, who accompanied the Lord during his South Indian tour.
Om Agyanati Mirandasya Aginandana Sarakaya Chakshurun Naditam Gena Tasmai Sri Ganave Namaha.
So this section is continuing. Lord Chaitanya greeting all the devotees after his return from South Indian tour and being introduced to the Puri Arisan devotees, some of whom he had never met, by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And in this particular section, we hear the conclusion. Last week we heard a little bit from Vedavyas Priya Maharaj about Bhavananda Rai coming forward and being acknowledged as Pandu, and his 5 sons as the 5 Pandavas, and his wife as Kunti. So they are his eternal servants. And here, Bhavananda Rai is completing that surrender, offering everything to the Lord, and especially his son Vaninath. He had 5 sons, Ramananda, Gopinath, Vaninath, Kasinath, and Srinath. So he's offering everything to the Lord, but in particular, he's giving his son Vaninath Rai, Vaninath Patanayaka, to the Lord for his personal servant, as his personal servant. And there really isn't very much narrated about Vaninath for the rest of the book. There's a little bit. I don't think we'll get the time to it today. But in the story of Gopinath Patanayaka, when he was in a little riff with the son of the king and placed on the changa, he was going to be killed. We might get to it. It's a beautiful story. I wasn't going to do it, but then I read it yesterday. It was so sweet, so we'll see if we have time. But what happened was that when all the news came to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, The one thing he asked about, this was later on, much later in their pastimes, after Vaninath had rendered service to him for some time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked the messengers bringing the information about what was happening, he said, what was Vaninath doing when he was arrested? So the kernel that I pulled out of that was that by rendering service to the Lord, even though he doesn't get a lot of print, even though he's not a big name in the society of devotees, he's a simple servant, is that he's very dear to the Lord. Otherwise, he didn't ask about Ramananda, he didn't ask about Bhavananda or any of the other brothers. He asked about Vaninath, who was his servant, who was rendering service to him on a daily basis. So today is also the disappearance day of Raghunandana Thakur and Vamsidas Babaji. So we'll talk about their pastimes. And it's interesting that there's a similar thread of this concept throughout all of their lives. They're Thakur and we're worshiping and honoring their appearance day. But when we hear about their lives and how much is really known about them, it's not a whole lot. But still, they're so dear to the Lord that we can learn from them. In the Sarartha Darshini, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on the 10th canto, you may remember there's the section where Krishna blows his flute. He goes down to the banks of the Jamuna on the full moon night of Kartik and calls the gopis with his flute. And each gopi thinks that he's calling her alone. And they all have these hundreds and thousands of experiences of how to get out of the house and make it down to the banks of the Vamsibad. And in the description of those different gopis, there's descriptions of the different obstacles that they all experienced. Some of them never made it out of the house. Some of them had children. Some of them were actually restricted and stopped by their relatives. And it describes that some of the gopis were Nitya Siddha, eternal associates of the Lord, who travel with him on his as his entourage and enhance his pastime while he's performing them. And they were all able to go and dance with the Lord. But some of those gopis were jivas who had matured enough to the point where they got gopi bodies, but they weren't completely mature in their love for Krishna. So some of them were restricted, some of them had children, but still they were in gopi bodies. And the idea that's expressed is that when Krishna performs his pastimes, he does so with his eternal associates. They travel along with him and perform those. But he also is casting his net and bringing back to him those jivas who have performed bhakti over lifetimes and come from the darkness of the material world as conditioned souls and elevated to the point where they're ready to become nitya siddhas, nitya muktas, eternally liberated, but they're not yet that mature. So what they have to do is associate with the Lord's eternal associates in order to become that final maturity. It's a beautiful section describing how that's necessary. So by hearing about the lives of the eternal associates and intimate associates of the Lord, we also gain an insight about how we can become qualified, what we may need to do, learn the lessons from their examples, how and what we have to do in order to attain that position of being mature enough to go and associate with them, which I think we're all obviously interested to do. So, Raghunandana Thakur. Raghunandana Thakur, according to the Gaura Gonadesh Deepika, here's the verse. The third member of the Chatur Vyuha, Pradyumna, took part in Radha Madhava's Leela in Raj as Krishna's intimate friend, or Priya Narmasaka. He has now appeared as Raghunandana, whose body is non-different from that of Lord Chaitanya. It's also mentioned that he's partly influenced by the Shakti of Kandarpa Manjari. So Raghunandana Thakur was a member of the Chatur Vyuha, Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. And he manifested as the son of Mukunda Das, who was a doctor, a physician. Mukunda had two brothers, Madhava and Narahari Sakar. And Narahari Sakar, does anybody know who he was in Vrajaviva? Madhumati, yes. So these devotees have come in the form of males to be able to associate with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna in the mood of Srimati Radharani. And Raghunandana Thakur, as he was growing up in this house with his father and two uncles, Narahari Sakar was very friendly and intimate with his nephew and taught him how to do puja and taught him different shastra and chanting and bhajans, as we just sang. So one day, probably the most famous song for Raghunandana was that he was a young boy, kind of similar to Srila Prabhupada, how he grew up in the Radha Govinda Mandir, and he would come home, his father, he would see late at night the puja being done. He lived in a temple. The whole family, the whole day family would worship in that temple. So similarly, the family of Mukunda, Madhava, and Narahari Sakar with their young boy Raghunandan was worshiping the deity of Gopinath. And one day, everybody was out doing medical doctor business, and Mukunda was supposed to do the offering to the deity, but he also got called away on an emergency. So although Raghunandana was very young, Mukunda told him that I'm going on this emergency, but you make sure the deity gets his offering. So Raghunandana, after his father had left, took the bhoga and put it before the Lord, and he had been taught by Narahari Sakar how to do these rituals, but he was a young boy, and he sat before the Lord, and he said, please eat the bhoga. And the deity just stood there. And he said, no, no, please eat the bhoga. Finally, due to his calls, he was so, please eat, I'm offering this to you. My father, my uncles have taught me, you must eat. So out of love for his devotee, Gopinath reached down and ate the whole plate. So later that day, Mukunda came back from his emergency and said, okay, Raghunandana, where's the prasad? I said, well, there's nothing left. The deity ate the prasad, ate the bhoga. He said, no, 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 bring the bhoga. Bring the prasad. No, the deity ate the prasad. It's gone. So anybody who has a child who's Pradyumna from the Chatur Vyuha knows that he has a special entity in his home. So he appreciated this. The next day, again, he made arrangements that there were some ladus for the deity. And he said, I'm going out again. I have to do again. So again, obviously Gopinath likes your offering. So make the offering. So Mukunda left the house. Raghunandana prepared all the paraphernalia. He went before the deity. But Mukunda hadn't gone. He wanted to see what happened. So he snuck back into the house and he watched as Raghunandana placed everything before the deity and told Gopinath, eat. Please eat. And Gopinath reached down and he ate half the ladu and looked up and saw Mukunda hiding and stopped. So apparently even today in that temple, the deity holds half a ladu. And this is the deity of in Srikanda. In Srikanda, there's many devotees, and they used to go every year to see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu during the Chaturmas. And Raghunandana obviously also went with them. There's a few other descriptions of his pastimes. Oh, here's a nice one. There's a book which describes the different Vaishnavas. It's called Vaishnav Abhidhan. According to the Gaudiya Vaishnav Abhidhan, another miraculous event took place in Raghunandana's life. One day, Abhiram Thakur came to Srikanda to pay his obeisances to Raghunandana. Then he embraced him and melted with feelings of prema. Raghunandana started to dance and sing kirtan, and while doing so, one of his ankle bells slipped from his foot and went flying off. landing 4 miles away in Akai Hut near his disciple Krishnadas's house. Later, the order of to commemorate this event, a tank was excavated there, which was given the name Napur Kun. He participated in the Keturi festival organized by Narottam Das Thakur and at Gadadhar Das's festival in Katwa and at the commemorative festival for Narahari Sakar in Sri Kanwa. There's a book by Narahari Chakravarti which is called Bhakti Ratnakara. Bhakti Ratnakara is a book which describes, we've all heard the story of Narottam, Shyamananda, and Srinivasacharya taking the books of the Goswamis and taking them to Bengal. That period of life with the six Goswamis, their books, and just subsequent to them, the next generation, is all narrated in the book Bhakti Ratnakara. So Bhakti Ratnakara says about Raghunandana Thakur, anyone who is dear to Raghunandana will win Mahaprabhu's mercy for life after life. Raghunandana is so merciful that he gives life to the most humble and fallen. Someone said, what humility, there is no one who is his equal. And others said, he is as beautiful as Kandarpa himself. The story of his disappearance, which is today, which happened today, on this Tithi, was that Srinivasacharya had also heard, Srinivasacharya and Raghunandana, kind of the same age, second generation, and they really wanted to meet, but their whole life they had never met. So finally, Srinivasacharya went to Sri Kanda, and they had big, big kirtan. Hundreds of devotees got together, and they were just dancing in ecstasy, twirling, rolling on the ground, shedding tears, choking in ecstasy, being together. Raghunandana Thakur and Srinivasacharya embraced. They talked a little bit about preaching, in the interim, and then started up another kirtan. And during the kirtan, it's described that while everyone was witnessing, Raghunandana started to, like, it's almost like, I guess in movies today we have those special effects where a person just kind of disappears from the screen. And he disappeared in front of everyone. There was nothing left. He just faded and disappeared. Chaturvyuha Raghunandana Thakur Kijaya. Bamsidas Babaji. Bamsidas Babaji was a contemporary of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, but younger. When we lived in Mayapur, we used to have the apartment right at the Goshala, that pink building on the top floor, facing Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house in, on the other side of the Jalangi on one side, and facing Yogpit on the other side. And the Goshala was right there. And there was a veterinarian who had been, who was a local. And talking with him, he described that Mayapur is not anything like what we saw, what we see now, when he was a boy. So this means only 30, 40 years ago, 50 years ago maybe now, Mayapur was all forested. He said even as a boy, he would see tigers. So the time when Bhaktisiddhanta lived there and performed his bhajan and then started Sri Chaitanya Math, it wasn't very built up. But whoever lived there in that area, obviously there wasn't a whole lot going on, so everybody knew each other. So Bamsidas was a Baba who lived on the bank of the Ganges. He was born in a fisherman's family. His father was a fisherman in Bangladesh. And he was married at a young age and had a son. But in that local village, there was one Baba named Narottam Das Babaji. And Narottam Das Babaji, somehow or another, Bamsidas, became very attracted to the bhajan and worship of Narottam Das. So he would constantly go to the temple, and he started hearing and becoming more and more enthused for a spiritual life and less interested in his wife and his child, to the point where finally he just left and went to Navadvip and was performing a type of bhajan that is unconformist. He was not a normal... do we have a picture? Can you put that picture up of Bamsidas Babaji? This book is, this description is written by Obiel Kapoor. Obiel Kapoor is one of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers that was very friendly and very appreciative of ISKCON, lived in Vrindavan, lived near the Radharaman temple, associated a lot with devotees, wrote several articles for BTG, and he wrote a book called Vaishnav Saints. Apparently, during Vamsidas Babaji's lifetime, Bhakti Siddhanta associated a little bit with him, not very much, but he would arrange for different devotees of the Gaudiya Math to bring necessities of life, vegetables, different things, to Vamsidas, but not associate with them very much. And I'll describe a little. So there are first-hand experiences of devotees who associated with him. It's not just some stories that developed. They actually were there. They experienced these things and have shared them, and it became common lore amongst the Gaudiya Math. So this is how Obiel Kapoor explains who he was. Vamsidas Babaji lived in a world of his own. His world centered around his deities, Gaura Gadadhar, Nitai, Radha Krishna, and Gopal. Apparently he had a little Radha Gopal, little Radha Krishna, but big Gaura Nitai and Gadadhar. They were like 3 feet tall. He never dressed them. He never woke them up. He never put them to sleep. He would just carry them with him in big bags and cloths wherever he went. And he wouldn't talk to people normally. He would talk to the deity. And he would talk about himself in the third person. Vamsidas. Like a person would ask him a question and he would look at Gaura Nitai and say, this person is asking Vamsidas a question. What do you say? And then he would answer to the deity. He lived in a world of his own. For the service of these deity, he had two brass pots, some earthen pots, one plate, one glass, some small cups, panchapatra, a bell, a conch shell, and nothing else. Baba passed day and night in the service of his deity and in sweet talks with them. Early in the morning, he went out from his kuti to collect flowers. Then he went for bhiksha. Means he went from door to door and would go out and collect some bhoga to offer them. He returned to the kuti about noon and made garlands from the flowers for each of his six deities. After that, he started cutting vegetables. He washed each vegetable a number of times. Then he cleaned the rice, examining each grain. If he found any grain from which the husk was not completely removed, he removed it with his own hand. He did everything very slowly, contemplating all the time the Leela of Radha Krishna and Gaura Nitai and singing or talking to them. It was only late in the evening that he could cook and offer bhoga to his deities. He had no consciousness of time. One morning and evening, day and night, meant nothing to him. Almost the whole night he kept away, talking and singing. Once, Sripad Haridas Goswami was surprised to see him cooking for the deities about 9 a.m., and the Baba said, and this Goswami said, "Oh, Baba, it would be nice if you could prepare bhoga for these deities in the morning every day." Babaji replied, "I do not know morning and evening. Am I their father's servant to feed them at appointed hours? If they want to eat like that, let them make their own arrangement for cooking. Let Gadadhar cook for Gaur. Nitai is an avadut. He has no caste. He can go and eat anywhere. I do not worry about Gopal. A milk cow comes every day and gives him milk. He can live on that. I have to worry about Radha Krishna. For them, I will have to cook a little rice and vegetables. But if they don't like it, they will go to Vrindavan and do Madhukari." Once, he, as mentioned, he only had a few pots. He had a pot that he would cook for each of Gaur, Nitai, and Gadadhar. And he would never lock his kutir. It was famous that he wouldn't lock it. He just kept everything there. And one day, Gaur and Nitai's pots were stolen. So he went out, he did this, collected the flowers, went out on bhiksha, collected the vegetables, came back, and saw that the pot was gone. And he said, "Oh, you boys are naughty. You let someone come and steal your bowl, you get no bhoga." So he didn't cook for Gaurni or Tai, or Nitai. Gaur or Nitai, he wouldn't cook. He cooked for Gadadhar, he cooked for Radha Krishna, he cooked for Gopal, he was offering. And he was telling them, "You're naughty, you're not getting anything." And all of a sudden, one man came And he was feeling really bad. He said, I have Nittai's pot. I stole this pot from you. I have to get it back. So then he cooked again. He cooked for Nittai. He said, Gaur, you're not going to get anything unless your pot comes back. And the man came back with Gaur's pot and gave Gaur's pot and said, okay, now. So that happened. One time he wanted to go to Puri. So Bhakti Siddhartha arranged a devotee named Jyoti Shekhar. Jyoti Shekhar was a brahmachari servant. So Jyoti Shekhar traveled with Vamsidas to Puri and back, which took quite some time. It took several months. And here's some recounts of what he said. Jyoti Shekhar Prabhu stayed with Vamsidas for around 3 months. After 3 months, Jyoti Shekhar Prabhu was about to leave Vamsidas. So he asked for his mercy and blessings. Oh, there was one nice story. While they were traveling, of course, at that time, 500 years ago, there were no trains or cars or roads or anything like that. So they were just walking. And they walked over this one bridge, and it started to get dark. And they were just out in the middle of a field. There was no anything around. So they made a little camp and stayed there for the evening. And it was a full moon night. And around midnight, all of a sudden, everyone was awakened by some rustling. And they looked up, and there was a whole bunch of women, beautiful women, dressed in white, who came and all paid their obeisances to the group of devotees and then traveled on. So the next morning, when they awoke and started traveling, they were asking everyone that they met and anyone in the local area, where is the village around here? What was there? Was there a festival or something last night? And they never found out. Apparently, what they concluded was that some demigoddesses must have arrived there and simply to offer their obeisances to Vamsidas Babaji. They came to the group and offered their pranams. They had no idea where those women came from. There was nobody to accompany them. Jyoti Shekhar told this story. So Vamsidas answered by speaking to Gopal when Jyoti Shekhar asked him for his blessings. He said, how can I get your mercy? Telling the story of Narada once asked Krishna for his mercy, and Krishna replied, offer flowers and fruits, then I shall be merciful. Narada said, oh, I'm a poor man. Where can I get such fruits and flowers? If you can't get fruits and flowers, then just at least pray to me, said the Lord. In this way, Vamsidas indirectly replied to Jyoti Shekhar. However, Jyoti Shekhar again asked him what kind of sadhana he should do, to which Vamsidas replied. Narada once asked Krishna a similar question. So Krishna replied that just as it is impossible to put sand in the ocean to build a road across it, in the same way it is impossible to get the Lord's mercy just by following sadhana, what to speak of material means. We must get the mercy of devotees, and then only is it possible. Then the Lord will be merciful to us, and we shall be favored. One last story is devotees used to come to Vamsidas. He was very famous because Bhakti Siddhartha had said, there's a couple of stories. What happened one time was that the Leela goes that there was a woman who had a basket of fish, and she was going through the street offering the fish for sale. And because Vamsidas had been born and brought up in a fisherman's family, somehow or other that impulse to buy a fish manifested, and immediately he became furious. He became so angry, he started yelling at his deities, why are you not protecting me? I've surrendered my life to you, and you give me this? He took his deities, he tied them up, he threw them in the river, and put his foot on the rope. And it lasted long, long time. And so suddenly people saw, what is he doing? He's taking his deities, he's drowning them in the Ganges. And one man came up and said, Baba, what are you doing? He picked up a rock and he threw it at him. So everybody stepped away. Now when Bhakti Siddhartha Saraswati heard this story, he had been sending the Gaudiya Math devotees to serve him and send him stuff. He said, stop, don't go to him anymore. So in the mat, through the next few days, the story was, the realization, the adjustment was that somehow Vamsidas had become offensive, and Bhaktisiddhanta no longer wanted the devotees to associate with him. And this rumor came to Bhaktisiddhanta, and Bhaktisiddhanta called all the devotees, and he said, "You think that I have told you not to go to Vamsidas because he's become offensive to his deities. This is not the reason. The reason is that you won't understand his bhav. He's on the highest level of transcendence. He's dealing with his deities in a way we can't possibly understand. So for our own benefit, best we stay away and don't get too intimate with a person who's on such a level." So because Bhaktisiddhanta had indicated his level of advancement, everybody appreciated. One day, one devotee came to Vamsidas and asked, "How can I see Bhagavan?" Vamsidas. He stayed for days in front of Kutya. Finally, Vamsidas came out. He said, "What do you want?" He said, "I want to see Bhagavan." One word was the answer. Weep. Weep for Krishna. Then you'll see Bhagavan. So this is the pastimes of Vamsidas Babaji. So when I was reading about them, I was realizing Vamsidas Babaji is on some level that if he was in ISKCON today, I don't think he would be very much appreciated. If Raghunandana, a little child, wanted to perform deity service to the deities, would we allow any child to just go up and do the puja? And Vaninath was a person who isn't written about a lot, but he's like an unsung hero. So I wanted to ask different devotees, maybe share a personality, a Nitya Siddha, associate of the Lord, who is a not so well known person, but whose bhakti is certainly appreciated by Krishna. Anybody want to share a personality? Samapriya had a good one. Can you give her the microphone?
No, I forgot.
Come on. You forgot your unsung hero. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taking darshan of Lord Jagannath.
Oh, yeah.
Hare Krishna. When Lord Chaitanya one time went to the Jagannath temple and took darshan of Lord Jagannath, he was standing against the Garuda Stamba, and he was totally absorbed in transcendence and the love, and his devotees were standing around him. So one lady also was taking darshan, and she climbed up on the shoulders of Lord Chaitanya. So the devotees looked and tried to chastise her and take her down. And the Lord said, no, I wish I had such devotion to the Lord as that lady standing up on his shoulder. So I think that's kind of a story that people would remember, but she's kind of an unsung hero, her devotion.
Pushkar Prabhu? No, you go ahead. Tell a little something. Tell a little. The synopsis, if possible.
Kola Vaitashita is not really unsung. Think about it.
But why would you choose him?
I know he's
why
not.
Why would you think of him?
He was unsung. He wasn't known at the time.
Very
until
good.
The Mahaprakash and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Bring Sridhar," and they were wondering, "Who is this Sridhar?" And he realized it's just this banana swala guy down by the river, you know, worships the Ganga. They didn't know that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was going there on a regular basis, I don't know, a daily basis, and dealing with him. He dealt with many people, used to cheat them out of their goods. But he would always tease him and say, "Look at you, you know, you worship Ganga. So many people are worshiping Chandi or Durga. They have big, big money, and you are living in a hut with holes in it, your clothes are tied in knots," like that.
And who was he previously?
Sudama Brahmana?
Yeah.
Is he?
Yes. Madhumango.
No, not
Sridhar, Sudama. Oh, Madhumango.
Who is, they didn't mention who Raghunandan is. Said he's one of the...
Chaturvyuha, Pradyumna.
But then it said Priyanarma...
Priyanarma Saka. Yeah.
But didn't say the name?
No. And also I read Kandarpa Manjari, was like partial. Pundarik Prabhu?
We visited Jatishekhar's house. They had one steak from Bhamsi Das Babaji's tent. He used to have a tent.
Oh, really?
They would check. Steak.
That held the tent up.
Yeah. Jati or Jyoti?
Sai Radhadamodar Prabhu?
The Chand Kazi was a Muslim man during Lord Chaitanya's time, and he was oppressive to the devotees and did so many offensive things. Yet Lord Chaitanya came to him and they discussed nicely. Lord Nrisimhadev had come to him before that. And he concluded that no one, he gives the order that no one will restrict the Harinam movement. And then he has a samadhi there that people visit and say to him saintly now.
Nice, very nice example. He was offensive too.
This is, frankly speaking, Srila Prabhupada installed many deities outside of India. He's the first acharya in the Vaishnava culture. He did the installation of so many deities, especially Radha Krishna deities all over the world, in all the major cities and countries.
Yeah.
It's a great contribution. I'm sorry? What are you talking
about? Prabhu?
People that we don't know.
I got somebody else.
I don't remember that. I heard the story about, I think it was during Mahaprakash Leela, and there was a big Abhishek of Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya noticed this little young girl, her name was Dukhi, and how nicely she was bringing the water pots and putting them in line or something like that. So during that Abhishek ceremony, Lord Chaitanya specifically noticed this little girl doing it, and then he named her Sukhi.
Oh, very beautiful. Thank you. Any other water bearers that somebody can remember, think of? Didn't Srila Prabhupada appreciate that woman in the Radha Damodar temple when he was there? Every day she would go down to the Jamuna, simply witnessing her bhakti. Simple woman would go down to the river and get some pots and bring them back for Damodar's seva. One of the things I'm trying to kind of bring it and express it, there's flies and there's bees. And if we learn to see the beauty in each other and in others' bhakti, I think there's a section when Daksha and Lord Shiva, that pastime, there's a purport, I forgot to look it up, where it describes that elevated personalities see the good in others. Low-class people see the bad in others. They see the faults. And Guru said, oh, we have a verse? Oh, yes.
Well, during the Lord's Sankirtan, Leela, Nagar Sankirtan, there was one Buchi shoemaker dealing with leather. And when he saw the Lord coming, he had the realization, all of a sudden he stood up and he started dancing. I have seen. He saw the...
Is that from Chaitanya Bhagavat, maybe?
No. He was a...
Mochi.
Mochi.
Mochiwala.
Mochiwala.
Yeah.
He saw Radha and Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Yes. We just, Ragatmika, in our Srimad Bhagavatam study, we just finished the chapter called The Supreme Lord is Equal to All. It's the first chapter of the seventh canto. And it's amazing that the Lord is not affected. He's completely transcendental. He's not judging like we do. One of the things I really liked about living in Vrindavan and learned to appreciate, there's so many different sects of worshipers of Radha and Krishna, but they're there, they're in Vrindavan and they're doing their worship. What else can you do other than appreciate? But here we have, you know, it manifests in different ways where we're very extremely critical of people who do it a little bit differently or worship a little bit different person or something. It's Krishna's not like that. The pastime actually evolves in that particular chapter, how Yudhisthira is inquiring from Narada, how did this rascal, Shishupal, get liberation? Everybody saw his soul enter Krishna. He's a nonsense. So from his point of view, he's like, this guy was in the assembly blaspheming Krishna on and on and on, but yet he attained liberation. How is it possible? Of course, we know the story because we know the history. Jaya and Vijaya. So the history of that person and who he was and what he was doing completely changes the view of Yudhisthira. So he thought he was a nonsense rascal king that didn't appreciate Krishna. Then he comes to realize it was an eternal associate who had come to help him in his pastimes. It completely transformed his bhava.
Two examples. One is the Mataji who offered to Lord Ram the banana in such ecstasy. She actually peeled it and offered the peel to him. But he appreciated the bhakti. And when the drunkard walked into Second Avenue to offer the toilet paper, Prabhupada recognized his beginning of his devotional service.
Thank you very much. Marvati, Ganadam.
Okay.
Come see. Yes, behind the foliage.
I was cooking an offering in Radha Madhava's kitchen in about 1975 or 6. And visiting deities. Okay, Jananivas Prabhu would come in to the room next door to get his breakfast around 11 o'clock. And he took it out to the hall, the veranda to eat and came back in a minute later and said, how come the visiting deities of Gaur Nitai, they were the ones that traveled on the boat, Nitai Pada Kamala Gaur Nitai? He said, how come no one made garlands for them? And I didn't know. And he said, well, I can't eat breakfast with that, you know, with them not having garlands. So he went out to the gardens, picked the flowers, made the garlands, missed his breakfast. Just saw that as a sign of
bhakti.
Bhakti, yeah.
Bhakti, is that not
I'll try and keep this concise, but it's going to be difficult. There was a devotee I became friends with when I was a Sankirtan leader in Dallas in 1990. His name was Nichananda. He was in charge of life membership. And then I moved to Denver, and my parents were getting old. They lived near Alachua in a retirement community. And they gave me their car, so I flew down and actually came for the GBC Temple President meeting here in Alachua, and then I drove the car back. And I was going to some place, some godforsaken place in the middle of Iowa, and my custom was to just stop and find an Indian motel and ask them to let me stay for free. So I went into, you know, I stopped in this area, and I said, I have a friend here. It's from India, and he owns a motel. Can you? I'm not sure which motel it was. You know, it was one of the interstate exchanges. And so it was an Indian person behind the desk, and said, well, I think it's just down over here because he believes the same thing that you do. You know, I was wearing my dhoti and shaved head and tila. So I went in. There was a Western lady behind the reception counter,
And I said, I'd like to speak with the owner. And then 6'4", he said, he's right here. And then he came into the lobby. He's like 6'4". He offered full dandavats right in the lobby. There were all these Western Then we stayed up till 2 o'clock that night speaking. I got there probably around 9 o'clock. And he told me how he became a devotee. His family, they were the fourth wealthiest family in Fiji. And they lived right next to the temple. They were Shaivites. And they couldn't stand how they were woken up every morning by Mangala Arati. So they had a whole plan. They had a blueprint of the temple, and they were going to blow it up. They actually, this was their meditation, a constant meditation. And you know, they were wealthy people. I think they hired someone. They were actually going to blow the thing up. So the more he meditated, and then he actually started becoming a devotee, you know, with this constant meditation. And, you know, so he became a devotee, became a disciple of Tamal Krishna Maharaj, who preached in Fiji. And then, you know, his father was just furious that he'd become a devotee. And it was really negative towards the movement, you know, so negative he's going to blow it up, blow a temple up. And so then what happened is that that family, through some major financial reversal, lost all of their money. Okay? So now, Nityananda is the temple president, last I know, in Dallas, and his father lives in the temple. He's still a little afflicted with impersonal understanding, but is very appreciative of Krishna consciousness. So I guess that's kind of in the unsung hero category.
Vaninath Raghunandana Thakur Vamsidas Babaji Kita. Srila Prabhupada Kita.